Hi, I'm Elisa Lamel, Legal Content Specialist for Krauss Financial Services. I'm joined today by Nina Whitehurst of Crossville, Tennessee. Nina is an experienced elder law attorney that has been practicing in the industry for over 35 years and the owner of Cumberland Legacy Law. Her practice is primarily focused on estate planning and Medicaid crisis planning, and she's an active member of various groups, including Elder Council, Wealth Council, and NAVA. Today, Nina will be sharing some of her insights with us regarding Medicaid spend down strategies, more specifically using the promissory note versus the Medicaid compliant annuity. Nina, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. It's good to be here. It's always nice to see you, Elisa.
Absolutely. So let's jump in. How did you get started in the elder law industry and more specifically Medicaid crisis planning?
Well, I was already doing estate planning, and anybody that's been doing that for a while, you see that it's a natural extension. It just comes up all the time. Usually it's a meeting with adult children, and then they say, oh, by the way, I've got this problem with my mom or my dad needs to go in a nursing home, and what do I do? And they also become interested because I always talk to them about whether they want to do Medicaid pre-planning for themselves. So it's just a natural extension. I wasn't doing it at first, but it became apparent that I really needed to be doing that in order to provide full service.
So how much of your practice would you say consists of the Medicaid crisis planning, and how often do these cases come up?
So I'd have to split that up between Medicaid pre-planning and Medicaid crisis planning. I know we're probably going to talk mostly about crisis planning today, but pre-planning is probably about 50% of my estate planning clients engage in Medicaid pre-planning. But the crisis planning itself is, I'm going to say about 20%, but it's pretty steady. I usually have one or two or three going at any given time. I'm not sure I could handle more. It's actually kind of intense when you get one of those cases. It's kind of drop everything because it's a crisis. So, you know, that's why we call it crisis planning. I mean, my husband who works with me and I really do kind of have to drop everything and focus on that for some really long, solid periods of time. So it's about as much as we can do, I'd say is about 20% without growing the firm.
So when you're looking at a spend down strategy for your clients, they have the option to use a promissory note or a Medicaid compliant annuity. Which is a better spend down tool, and how do you determine when each is appropriate?
Well, I have a very, very strong bias towards the Medicaid compliant annuity. And I know that's what we want to talk about today. And I just admit it, it's my bias. I do not do promissory notes, but I have my reasons for not doing them. And I'm happy to share those with you. And I'm not saying, you know, that every attorney that does them is wrong. I'm just saying I have my own reasons and I feel very strongly about it. And I just won't do the promissory notes.
Sure. So why do you only exclusively use Medicaid compliant annuities? Is there a reason you choose not to do promissory notes?
Yes. Let me think about the best way to explain this. It boils down to, I want a plan that I know will work. And I know the Medicaid compliant annuity works. It's tried and true. And those payments are going to come like clockwork and you're not going to have to worry about it. I do not know that the promissory note is going to work. Just recently, this came up on the NALA listserv. And I don't remember exactly how it was teed up. I was reading the thread and thinking how interesting. I'm going to be talking about this in a couple of days. I think it was an adult child who was who received either a gift, maybe it was 100% gift, maybe it was a half loaf. I wasn't really clear on that. And the adult child stopped paying. That's exactly what I worry about with those promissory notes. And the implication for what happens when the adult child doesn't pay, I'm not a litigator, but there was speculation on the listserv about whether the adult child might be subject to a fraudulent conveyance or what they call now a voidable transfer lawsuit. Yeah, I think there's a good chance of that. There was even discussion about whether the attorney had exposure for malpractice or worse, aiding and abetting a fraudulent conveyance. And so I don't want to go down that road. I just don't even want to get close to it. It seems to me that if you're going to do a note, and this is just my own standard of care, that I would need to underwrite that. And I'm saying adult child, because that's who it usually is. It might be someone else, but let's just say adult child. I would have to underwrite that adult child the same way that I think an institutional lender does. And with that, I do have a lot of experience. And they use the, in underwriting, they use the four C's. If you compare it to diamonds, you know, you evaluate diamonds based upon cut, clarity, color, and carat weight, right? Four C's. You can evaluate borrowers the same way. There's four C's as well. And it starts with, trying to remember, character, creditworthiness, capacity, and what's the last one? I've got my note here, collateral. Yeah. So if you take each of those in turn, let's talk about collateral. Those promissory notes are not secured. They're unsecured. So there's no collateral. Now, I suppose you could go down that road of securing them, but now you're making this into a really big project. I mean, securing a loan is, you know, another process in and of itself. And if you're going to do that, you're going to be spending so much time and money and due diligence and documentation and all that on it, that it would have been cheaper to do a Medicaid compliant annuity and more reliable. So no collateral. The next one, capacity. I usually think of that as cash flow. I don't really like the word capacity, but it's kind of the same thing. So how do I know that that adult child has the cash flow to repay that note? Well, he just received a pile of cash, so we know he's got that, but the repayment amount is going to be more than that, because remember, there's interest involved. So can he afford to pay that? Well, I don't know. Does he save a little bit of money every month, or is he going negative every month and, you know, running up credit cards? I would have to look at pay stubs, income tax returns, bank statements, credit card statements. I mean, I have to do all that stuff that a lender would have to do to underwrite that adult child's capacity. And I'm just not equipped to do it. I mean, I don't have the processes. I don't have the systems. The time involved makes it more expensive for the client if I were to do that. So it's hard to figure out whether he can afford to pay the interest. And then there's credit worthiness. So that's usually pulling a credit score. Some lenders will pull all three bureaus. Are you going to do that? You can. It's not impossible. You can pull credit report. But then if you do that, which score are you going to use? The top one, the bottom one, the middle one? Or are you going to use your own credit scoring system because you don't like their algorithm? A lot of lenders do that. They have their own credit scoring system and they figure it out themselves. And what are you going to use as your cutoff? Is it 650? Is it 700? Is it 750? Is it 800? And why? Which number you chose, why? Why did you choose that one and not a lower one and not a higher one? You know, can you justify it? Lenders have to do that. They have to justify the numbers that they use, and they base that on risk rating, all kinds of things. Well, it's just way beyond what I want to do with, you know, a Medicaid crisis case. So creditworthiness is not something that I really want to try to figure out. And then finally, there's character. That's the big one. You know, is he going to take the money and run? They have been known to do that. And that was that case that came up on the NALA listserv of the kid that took the money and ran. And that's what I worry about. And to me, it's so predictable that that could happen that I'm just not going to go down that road when I can go get a Medicaid compliant annuity and not worry about it. And even better, if I get the Medicaid compliant annuity from Kraus Financial, they'll do the calculations for me, which is really cool. You know, I do my own rough calculations, of course, and maybe some verifications, but wow, that's really nice. And if a factor changes, you know, they can just rerun the calculation. So it's already a stressful experience for the client and for the attorney to do these plans. It's nice to have one less thing to worry about. And believe me, I would lose sleep over those promissory notes. I don't want to ever have that occur on my watch with my client. So I'll tell you another example. This is a true story. I had a estate planning attorney friend of mine. I say had because he recently passed away, which is very sad. But he told me about that same thing. He had done an estate plan. Now, this was just a regular estate plan, so not a Medicaid crisis plan, but where the adult child brought his parents to him to do their estate planning because he thought it was important, which it is. And so the parents then appointed that adult child as their first attorney in fact, and then the daughter, it was the son that was appointed, the daughter was the second in line. And all seemed well. A few years later, the daughter came back to my friend's office and said, "Turns out my brother has run off with $100,000 of mom and dad's money, using it for his own piggy bank, his own expenses." So there you go. That's what I'm talking about. And there's not a lot we can do about that, but at least in these promissory note situations, we don't have to do that. We don't have to rely on the character of that adult child. We have other options. And so I hope that answers the question, but that's my reasoning.
Yeah, absolutely. So when working with Medicaid compliant annuities, what has your experience been in that crisis planning situation where you're using that as a tool? Have you received any complications or pushback from the clients and using that as the tool in this case?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't get any pushback because I do not mention notes as an option. I just don't want to go there. I'm not going to. I don't present it. So I don't get any pushback from that. And then they'll, the really, the more astute clients will ask about the fees. And their first question is it being paid to me? Is this my way of making more money? And I have to explain to them, no, it's not. This is a third party fee. It's not me. I'm not collecting it. I'm just, I'm going to collect the check from you. But when we get to that point where you're writing checks, you're going to see that it's not being written to me. So just a little subtle thing that they, pick up on. And then the amount of the fees, well, I think it's cheaper than, going down the promissory note and all the risks and all of that. It may depend on the size of the annuity, because the fees are kind of a flat fee at the lower annuity amounts, and then it kind of levels off, and then it starts to go into a percentage, and then it kind of drops away when you get to the really big numbers. Which is interesting. I only just recently saw that because I usually don't have those giant numbers, but I did have one recently come up. They're still not out of line. I think they're reasonable compared to the alternatives. So I don't get a problem with that. I do have to explain to them that with the Medicaid compliant annuity, there's that payback provision to Medicaid, in the event that the annuitant, requires care and passes with a lien owed to the to TennCare or Medicaid, whatever your state is. Here it's called TennCare. So I do explain that to them, but the note wouldn't be any different. That would be an asset, a probate asset of the estate. And at least in Tennessee, that Medicaid lien is a super priority lien. So it kind of has a payback provision anyway.
Sure.
When you look at it correctly about how it actually plays out in the end, it plays out the same. So it's not really a difference at all. But again, I don't have that conversation because I'm not comparing, promissory notes, but if I were to do that, that's what I would explain.
Understandable. So for any of our clients or attorneys or anybody in the Crossville, Tennessee area that is interested in working with you and discussing this type of spend down strategy, how can they find you?
Well, they can find me on the internet, of course, CumberlandLegacyLaw.com. Cumberland is the name of the county that I'm in. And I can be reached at 931-250-8585. My email is Nina@CumberlandLegacyLaw.com.
Nina, thank you so much for joining us today. For more information regarding achieving the best Medicaid spend down strategy for your clients, head to our website and check out a recent blog on the topic. And of course, you can always contact our office and speak to one of our skilled benefit planners to learn more. Thanks for watching.